Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Hey everyone, I was hoping to get this message put together sooner, but things like this unfortunately take time to set up. I just want to say that the acts of war against Ukraine break my heart, and I know as a prior service member myself that my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone who's fighting the fight that they really shouldn't have to. That being said, we have been working behind the scenes with all of our podcasts and podcast partners to put a fund together in order to pay for any refugee housing and other needs that go alongside that, like food, water, and any clothing needs. Internally, many podcasts in the Hospitality FM network have voluntarily given up sponsorship money in order to donate to the cause and are working on a unified message in order to spread throughout all of our podcasts. So this is me calling out to all of our property manager friends, industry experts, and anyone knowing of those providing lodging for Ukrainian refugees seeking safety. You can contact me directly at Will with one L, W-I-L, at slicktalkmedia.com. We have an internal document that is being updated in real time, so if anyone could share this message within your network, we'd greatly appreciate it. I'm also placing in the show notes a link to our GoFundMe and landing page for Rentals to Rescue. That's rentalstorescue.com, where we're putting funds together in order to, again, provide finances for any of these lodging and relocation needs. So thank you so much for tuning into this quick message. I hope you guys are all well and safe, as I know we have tons of listeners in Ukraine and other countries in Europe. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Good morning.
Good morning. What's up? Happy Monday.
Best day of the week.
Because love of it. Us.
Are you guys in love as much as I am?
I am. I bought some roses for my wife today.
Aww.
And she made 20 balloons with pictures, so she did much more efforts. I bought a rose actually after I get this present. Like, now I have to go to the shop. She bought like 20 balloons with photos of us and everything. Super sweet. So.
And yeah. You, Michael? Made it right in time to get Oliver and all of his classmates the Valentine's cards and candies that we were supposed to bring on Friday. So got it done. It's been a busy, hectic morning, but here we are. Happy Monday.
I love it. I love it. That's why you were late today. Makes sense. No, got to do what's first priority. So exciting stuff in the industry. We've had a lot happen this last week, I think. We had our group chat blowing up with articles. More than normal, which is a good sign. We had a little bit of a lull. You know, we had so much NFT stuff to talk about that we kind of forgot everything else in the world. But I'm excited to jump in today because we got some predictions that came true. We got some startups that are doing some cool stuff. And then, of course, you know, whatever else that we may jump into. So who wants to go first? Nose goes or rock, paper, scissors for startup of the week?
Can't see your hand.
Where's the there?
I'll go first.
You start.
Okay, here we go. Let's say hi to grandma.
I I've got two topics today on What's With the Noise. First of all, it is all the silence that you hear at the Olympics. It is a sad thing because I'm a huge fan of the Olympics, but two Olympics in a row, there have been no fans. And it really just takes the excitement and fun and the crowd out of it, if you will. So looking forward to the Paris Olympics in two more years, and surely we're going to have fans. Secondly, congrats to the team at Evolve, Brian Egan and company, for a monster raise to take on the giants of the world that have already IPO'd this year, like Sonder and Vikasa. Evolve's model is a little bit different than Sonder and Vikasa, where they do marketing, booking, guest management, basically getting the guests to the door, and then a local team that you hire yourself takes it from there for cleaning and maintenance. So kudos to Brian and company. Well done. Looking forward to seeing what you do with this $100 million. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, good morning. This morning is special because it's Valentine's Day, so I'm super happy. I want to say that I'm happy with my wife. She's watching probably, so I just have to get to say it. Okay, the startup of the week is Emerald Stay. It's actually a startup which actually is acquiring vacation rental operators. So what I know and what I heard is they're going to do soon a crowdfunding campaign. Actually, they want to raise more money actually to acquire more companies. They have 21 on the radar and they want to acquire four of them. They did some round already some time ago. They raised 1.7 a year ago, and I actually want to do a new round. It's not mentioned how much so far, but soon it will be probably communicated. Do crowdfunding and then acquire others. So the way they want to grow actually their business, just acquiring others, which is also an approach what you could do. And that's it for today.
Sorry about that, the little clip mistake there, but no, that's interesting that they're going to go acquiring vacation rental management companies.
Yeah,
just a quick question to you two. Do you guys think it's going to be a common thing? Is that providers or OTAs or anything like that are going to just start buying?
Yes, consolidation will happen. I think what I've learned after 7 years in short-term rentals is it is and always will be a hyper-local business. And that's why I really like the franchise model for vacation rentals versus a roll-up strategy and trying to keep it all in-house. Mm-hmm. You have to have those local staff that really know the market, that have tentacles everywhere to be successful. So yes, I do think there will be continued roll-ups. I'm waiting to see more roll-ups on the vendor side, to be quite honest, than the supplier side, but time will tell.
I'm still holding true to my prediction from earlier in the year that service providers will start buying or creating management companies and becoming a operator.
But then you're going to be competing with your customers, and that's a challenge. It's a tough look. So, well, I mean, Kayak is starting to do it with Kayak Hotels. So early days, but we'll see what happens.
For sure.
In the vein of predictions, one of the things that we talked about just a month and a half ago on one of our predictions was this discrepancy between geographies and not necessarily having anything to do with business model, but having simply to do with where you're based and how that has an effect on your company during COVID times. And one disturbing article and one promising article that came out this past week, thank you to Focus Wire for breaking the news, was Booking has laid off several thousand customer service employees, which never good to do layoffs, never good to do layoffs of thousands of people. And especially in customer service, where we know it's such an important part of the travel experience, is troubleshooting anything that has gone wrong. But on the flip side of that, we've got their competitor, Expedia, who closes at a record high for profitability. Now, they both play in the same sandbox. One is heavily North American exposed and one's heavily European exposed. And the results are there. You know, one company lays off thousands of people and the other has a record profitability. So that prediction, unfortunately, for one company, unfortunately for the other, has taken hold 45 days into the new year.
Well, I think it's connected as well. When I spoke with some hotels, what they said, okay, in the U.S. market, they said they're still weird. The occupancy is much higher. We're doing much better in the U.S. market. So, of course, you see the difference in there. I think it's a bigger thing as well. We have a lot of people from Booking.com who applied actually to work for us in the last month. A lot, actually. And one of them I spoke yesterday, candidate, and I asked as well, why did you apply for us? He said, well, I worked 8 years for Booking.com, and actually I just said, I stopped believing in the company. I said, oh, that's not, and I was surprising actually. And it's not the first one actually. So I don't know what's happening in there. I don't know how is the atmosphere also internally, but I think those signs actually, when people also maybe even in a different role within the company see that actually their colleagues are laid off, I think it'll be a bigger impact as well. But let's see what's happening. But I already saw in the last months that there was quite a lot of people leaving the company, even from by themselves, yeah, because they stopped believing. So,
I mean, we saw massive layoffs by Airbnb, like 25% of their staff.
Yeah,
at the start of the pandemic. Expedia, similar, had some really big layoffs. Is this Booking just catching up, or is it, do you guys think, an actual result of the geographies that they're strongest in?
Well, if you will say customer support, it's pretty related, of course, to traction, right? What is happening on the platform. So you would say if there's not much to do or less to do, or maybe they want to innovate on some stuff, maybe in the way they're doing support, could be. But yeah, it seemed to be there's, of course, a connection with transactions there. I'm really curious what's going to happen, because when I talk also to other colleagues in this industry, everybody is struggling to find people. So I think there will be a hard time in finding people again when they actually have to, well, get more people again on board. Or they reason it's like a long-term version. So they want to do less customer supporting. We want to automate more processes and stuff. And there's a different shift. But yeah, it's a huge number of people which actually are laid off. So I don't know if this is the reason really to the transactions, or it's like more a vision is like we want to really focus on more innovation and focus less on what they were selling to the hotels. Like, look, by EA, you might pay 18%, but what you get in return is a customer support in X numbers of languages. That's also how they were selling it to the property. So maybe they have a different approach there as well in vision. Might be. But yeah, maybe it's a bigger problem. But yeah, let's wait for their results. They're not announced yet, so let's wait a few weeks.
Yeah. I'll say a mix of geographic location, because I know they're definitely heavier in the European market than they are probably in the American. But my biggest thing, kind of like what you just said, Ross, was if they're trying to automate processes and start doing, you know, less human activities when it comes to their systems and everything that they're doing. One thing that I'm seeing in the industry and just kind of trying to understand or wrap my head around, and maybe you guys can get this too from like the service provider side, but I feel like everyone is just going so heavy on automation and tech. Like, I know tech's solving a lot of problems, but I think there's a point where it gets too much, where you try to automate too much. And that's when you're starting to lose the overall experience, the overall human connection part, like from the operator perspective to the service provider's perspective. So,
yeah,
my biggest concern is that too heavy of automation is going to ruin a lot of companies in this space.
I'm with you. If I'm in the head honcho seat, I'm going to ease in technology and not axe thousands of heads right off the bat. Right. I'm going to ease into it. And for one, the PR damage it does for your company for mass layoffs, you know, that's going to take a hit on their stock prices, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Versus easing into it and just doing small amounts of cuts as things become optimized, or just letting natural attrition, because I'm sure those are fairly high turnover roles, just let that take place and not rehire. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not a CEO of a publicly traded company. Yeah. I've never had to make those decisions. Thank goodness. You know, not a role I'm envious of.
Yeah.
But to me, it just screams that there is still massive inequality of travel and booking volume in North America versus Europe. Yeah. Ross, I mean, you shed some light. You guys have properties in both regions.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking now as well if I can find a bit more information, because of course Booking has a huge workforce in the Netherlands, right? It's the biggest tech company of the Netherlands, I think so. So even though the government wasn't even aware, it was a nice article of Julian sometime, where the government didn't even know, they thought that's like Booking had a few hundred people working for them. So what it looks like, actually I'm checking now what could be the reason, and actually what I'm reading now somewhere else is that actually they have 14 customer support centers, and actually 12 of them will be moved to Majorel, which is a customer support company. So it could be that they're going to outsource more the support and not doing it in-house. Could be one of the reasons, but it looks like this is actually what I can read in here. So yeah. Maybe not related directly to revenue or bookings. Maybe it's like we just want to focus on different areas and support we can do by others.
And it takes forever to fire people in the Netherlands, right?
Yeah.
So this could have been a year in the making.
Mm. Interesting.
We see with quite some companies and that Dutch companies, okay, and because it's not easy in that indeed to fire people or the regulations. So in that case, maybe they're going to start working with more outsourcing companies.
Yeah, Ross, if you could pick up Bidroom and drop it in any country, where would you put it today?
So, well, it's a Dutch company. I would say, I think still also when you're looking at investment, valuation, everything, then I would say make it a US company, right? Even though it's not bad to be a Dutch company, we see as well that we have a huge workforce in Poland. The law is changing here a lot, which doesn't make it easier. That's why we're also now checking possibilities, open an office in different countries as well, especially for developers. And also just hire much more remotely, which... Before, we want to have as much people together in the office. So this is the possibilities now. Being a Dutch company is still okay, but I think the most potential, if you look at valuations and possibilities, I think still it's a company to be US-based, has some benefits.
Yeah.
You see as well when the fundraising, if you're talking to investors, and of course, when we're talking to parties, even when you're US-based, you can see, of course, the investors in the US prefer to invest in US companies as well, right? They know the law, they know even though the Dutch ones are not so strict. But you see, for example, Polish companies had really difficulties in raising money because the whole way of structuring things, or for example, employer stocks, those things is tough. So I think those things are easier in the US, why that's why it's also sometimes easier to raise money, there.
Yeah. Well, shifting gears, talking about money, like $100 million for Evolve is a ton of money. Wander raised, was it 20 million on a Series A?
Yeah, I also saw an article that said 30. So I've been seeing more articles that say 20. So I'm going to just assume.
I've only
could seen be milestones, right? Because it will be 20 and they have an extra 10, which you will receive if they're reaching X. A milestone could be. It's happening.
Yeah, or 10 could be in numbers. Debt, 20 yeah. in equity.
Could yeah, one article just said, you know, Wander raises 30 million, and all the rest are saying 20. So I'm just gonna go
10 more or less. Do you see a difference, Will? No,
huh?
10 more or less. What's the difference, right?
Yeah, big deal.
Yeah, average week,
one or two employees, not much.
in business development, yes,
yeah. so it's a lot of money, and we see more and more investments continuing to flow into the vacation rental space. We saw one or two in the hotel world, but man, it really feels, and I've even seen articles lately that hotels are going to start building these mixed concepts properties where it is a hotel layered with service departments on top of it, layered with potentially co-working or some other draw to the building. And, you know, that's something we've talked about on the show for a long time. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. It's recession proof. It helps, you know, cut down on risk and drive up revenue. So I'm excited to see that next wave of properties, because if I'm going to Miami by myself, I want a hotel room.
Yeah.
If I'm going with my family or with friends, I want an apartment. I want my own room, but I also want a shared common space.
Yeah.
So I love the direction the industry's heading. You know, development takes years. So we won't see, some of these developments be spun up for 2, 3, 4 years, but it's exciting to see they're in the pipeline. They're thinking about the future. And next time a COVID happens or a recession happens, these units can be flipped to long-term rentals. And you want to talk about sustainability in travel, a hotel room can pretty much only be a hotel room or a podcast recording studio or a co-working space. It can't be, no one wants to quarantine in a hotel room for a month.
No.
Just not enough space. You'd go bonkers. So
I know me and Matt from Muse, the CEO. So he and I were talking not too long ago on the podcast and going into the side of reinventing the space, best real estate of a hotel, which is the lobby, which is never used really unless there's a lobby bar, there's all this other stuff. It may not be recession proof in the sense of like COVID. If you have another big COVID pandemic thing happen.
But you can't shut down the bar if it's also the front desk.
Amen. So
But did you ever realize how many people you're working from the lobby bar, right? That is, it's full with people just with the laptops on their knees or on the desk. And I think they're not even prepared actually for those services. I think hotels, when they're innovating and really focusing more as well on indeed remote works and getting people there for extra revenues and indeed using rooms for several, if you just have a video call maybe for 2 hours, use the room upstairs, right? And just and then go downstairs. So I think that's actually gonna happen as well. I think, well, I didn't listen to the podcast with Matthijs, but
it hasn't come out yet. It's
okay. That's why I didn't listen to it. Yeah, but I think if the technology is really ready for it, and you can say, I just book a room for a few hours and we discuss it in the past that they use those kind of things. Yeah. And indeed, when you're just focusing more on remote spaces where you could work and you need a room for a few hours and those things are easy to book, there's huge potential there. And you're moving into a different concept than hotels.
Well, we need to utilize space differently other than just nightly revenue. I think, companies like Pure Space, which is, heavy, vacation rental properties being used for day activities such as model shoots, podcasting, video shoots, whatever you want it to be. I think we need to start looking at space in a different sense of revenue rather than nightly.
One of my favorite companies that has totally looked at space differently. Shout out to another Dutch company, Ross, the Student Hotel.
Yes.
Super cool use of the property. Peak travel season is summer. Students are gone. You can convert these dorms into hotel rooms. Like, it checks a lot of the boxes to minimize vacancy, maximize space. The same things students want in their dorm.
That's amazing.
The traveler wants in their flat, right? I
want to go out and
play
right?
ping pong because I love playing ping pong. I need a space to study or do work. I need a space to relax and have a beer. Like, these are all things that travelers and students alike want. So, that's really a model I hope gets replicated by a lot of people.
They're doing extremely well. And we took the team 3 years ago. We took the whole team to Amsterdam. So everybody else from different countries, or they say around 70 people. We stayed in a student hotel in Amsterdam. But indeed, the guys had fun. They could play some ping pong downstairs. There was a nice bar. In the meanwhile, we gave a company presentation. We had a nice space where you can give some presentation. The rooms were cool, right? And it's mixed between students. So there's a lot of energy going on in there. So they're doing extremely well.
So Jennifer, thank you for the question. So the franchise model in vacation rentals, you see companies like Vacasa or V-Trips that are buying other companies in different markets and just rebranding it. And it's owned corporately. The franchise model, you're buying a market and that is your market. And you're paying a percent of revenue for shared services at the corporate office, whether that's accounting or marketing distribution or guest management.
Tech.
It helps take off some of the work that could be a shared resource where a local market might not need a full-time accountant or might not need a full-time revenue manager, but that stuff can be done by corporate. You still own the market. You still own the P&L. You just pay a percentage of revenue, typically 6 to 10% of revenue to the corporate office. Some examples of those, iTrip, Skyrun, Casago. Those are the big three. Casago is definitely the biggest of them.
V-Trips? Do you mean iTrips or V-Trips?
iTrip is a franchise model. V-Trips is an ownership. They own it all. Okay. So iTrip, Skyrun, and Casago are the big three, the most well-known doing it. But a lot of companies are starting to pivot into it. There's Grand Welcome is starting to do a franchise model. Home Time out of Australia. Shout out Dave Thompson. What's up, brother? There's a lot of companies pivoting into the franchise model because it really is a hyper-local business. You need somebody local and passionate about Breckenridge and passionate about Myrtle Beach and passionate about whatever. So, but you need the expertise held by the flag or the brand to take care of the stuff that's hard to scale in a local office. So, if you've heard Simon Lehman talk any in the past year and a half, 2 years, he agrees this is the future. A lot of the operators are talking about it, whether they've jumped into it or not. But great question, Jennifer. Appreciate you chiming in.
Awesome. And looks like we got another comment. Yeah.
Yep. Well, if you want to, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or something. And I'm happy to put you in touch with some of these franchisees and hopefully you can get the advantage of scale.
For sure.
Well, I think if you talk about franchise, I think more if you see the general approach, I'm not sure if it'll work. I think you will be more focusing on specific niches and sustainability, eco related, even if it's hotels or maybe even apartments or a specific kind of wish list, which is focusing on only families, for example, a specific brand, or for example, in the looking at the hotel space, maybe only castles, or maybe only boutique hotel style. So I think you will see more niche brands coming than a general approach, which you can doesn't make a lot of difference sometimes from an Airbnb or something.
Yeah, agreed. I saw one that was only eco hotels, so like very remote but very eco responsible properties. So people will start traveling in the niches that they like and enjoy. And if they're very passionate about travel, but also being green, you know, the eco routes one, if you want to feel royal and have some history, then, you know, I'm sure a castle brand will pop up soon, but we'll find out how all these franchise models tell a story and fold in with one another. You know, a lot of it is simply having direct bookings. You know, that's where Marriott's better than everybody else. People book direct. Delta better than everybody else. People book direct because of scale. And if you're a single market, you can only market to the guests who've stayed in Breckenridge.
Yeah.
But if you've got a traveler database from 40 markets across the country, then you're going to get a lot more direct bookings if you're any good at it at all.
Yeah.
And that saves you 15%, 15-20%.
For sure. No, I think it just makes sense to outsource the stuff like you said, Michael, the accounting, the marketing, some tech and distribution and all that other stuff, and then just really focus in, because I think that gives you as an operator perspective, and Jennifer knows, and I know, and a lot of the people that we know that watch this show or that are in our networks just know that it's easier to focus on the guest experience, but you don't have to deal with a lot of the back end stuff. If you can outsource a lot of that work, great, do it, make it easier for you to exceed 5-star service and to keep growing the brand. So it's just a good route to go. That's kind of getting close to wrapping up the show, and I'm just kind of curious for, I guess, final thoughts and questions. Do you guys think that, because we kind of touched a couple of different topics, obviously geographic location for companies matters, especially when it comes to growth and quarterly earnings for public traded companies. But then also this remote work thing, I think, is getting into such a bigger space than, you know, expected. Everyone kind of was saying, oh, remote work, and everyone's going remote. And it was just like becoming a very big trend that companies are trying to do in order to probably recruit. Let's be honest, the workforce is not easy to get right now. So when you're trying to recruit, what are you going to do? You're going to advertise all these trendy topics that workers are usually kind of looking for. So what do you think? Is this going to become more adopted, or is this just really a fad to get us over this hump? And then, you know, do you think companies are going to start making people come back to the office?
No, if we're looking at our approach, we keep it flexible. So of course we see that we want to still have this interaction. People have to put a switch on the cameras, but really I try to get them to the office a few days per week. But we also recruiting now quite a lot of people, for example, in different countries. We hired now 2 in Spain again. So fine, right? Which is perfect. And past weeks I was away. I couldn't imagine a few years ago that I'll be away a few weeks from the office and work remotely. Now it was really easy to do, and you see more people doing this. So yeah, it will stay like this. I think people already get used to it too much, and for sure it will stay. And even I think it will be even better and more flexible. And when the lobbies become better and really workspaces, I think it will be even
more
interesting. That said, we'll wrap up with one little data point that I, in a natural biz dev role, 100% agree with. You are 34 more times likely to have a request granted by somebody if you ask them in person versus over email. Hmm. 34 times more likely. Hmm. So face-to-face matters. Business will get back to it. It will be done in person as it always has been. Technology helps bridge the gap a little bit, but it's still 34 times less effective than being in person.
So with that statement, does that mean we're not going to work remote at all? Or do you think people are just going to start traveling more, working remotely without being at a headquarter, you know, for...
Yeah, I think there's... The fully remote is going to probably run back a little towards where it was in 2019, where yes, there's still lots of people fully remote and those people will travel more, but I think people will be started to get called back into the office. They might have more flexible schedules, work from the office 3 days a week or something, but in person matters.
Company culture stays as also is super important, right?
Yep.
Well, I was going to say, maybe this is a good topic for next week. So if you're listening live, watching live, you should send us a message in the comments or via email. You could do will@slicktalkmedia.com and send us your thoughts. Let's maybe get a little debate going. Let's see what the industry really says from different markets, different industries outside of vacation rentals and hospitality. I'd be very curious to know. So that is that's it for today. Happy Monday. See you guys all again next week. Smart locks, smart thermostats, automation, and a solution for any hotel and vacation rental company. Our show partners at Operto are the leading solution for operators to enhance their operations by integrating with your property management software and making sure that all your smart devices create a contactless guest experience while streamlining your operations. So don't forget to check them out on their website, send me a message, or just let them know that Will sent you and you are in good hands. So get ready to enjoy another episode of Slick Talk the Hospitality Podcast and check out operto.com or go to the podcast website and see our partners page.